All right, welcome into another edition of Lemon Pepper Parlay Podcast. Rob Parker here, Martin Weiss there. It is our NBA playoff edition, and man, so much crazy stuff going on. Martin can't be that happy. He's been all over the place. I'm here to rip you, Martin. I'm here to make you pay for your terrible picks. But we'll talk about that and much more. How you doing? What's up?
Do you hear that? That's the ambulance coming to pick up your Eastern and Western Conference Finals winners. That's what the ambulance coming to pick up the stars who are now out and injured. I told you, Rob Parker, dance last Wednesday, because today, on June 17th, right now, you're in a world of hurt, pal. I'll have you know.
Is that right? So the Nets can't win in Milwaukee tonight?
I didn't say the Nets can't win in Milwaukee tonight. I'm just saying, literally, you're in a world of hurt.
Okay. And the Clippers can't win at home in game six against Utah?
They can. However.
Okay, we're good. That's all you need to say. I'm just asking. That's all I want to say, is because you had your chest stuck out. You were talking pretty big before the playoffs started, and you've been wrong a lot. But let's start here. Mr. Martin Weiss, and Philadelphia, probably one of the biggest. I thought game three was the biggest choke I'd seen in a long time in the playoffs, but it actually was game five. Up by 26, they allow Atlanta to score 40 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, just unbelievable. Embiid had made 20 straight free throws. He missed two big ones at the end of the game. You have Ben Simmons, who refuses to shoot in the fourth quarter and made 4 out of 14 free throws in the game. And I just cannot get over where the Sixers are. And I don't have any belief that they can win both of the last two games in this series. What did you see yesterday?
What I saw yesterday was a continuation of what I saw in game three. Like, not just be like, Joel Embiid needs some help, right? I'm not trying to make it all about, like, give Embiid a pass or anything of that nature. However, when you have a guy out there like Ben Simmons, who is commanding so much of the ball, it would be like if Chris Paul was 6'9 and didn't shoot. Like, you know, he has the ball all the time. Ben Simmons always has the ball. And his refusal to be an offensive weapon is something that is – to me, it's been Philly's problem literally since he got there. And it's the reason why they're not going to win this series, because Doc Rivers is not going to adjust. He finally pulled Ben Simmons at the end of the game.
It was too late. But
it was too late by that point. Exactly. And I get that Ben Simmons is supposed to be this remarkable defender and this incredible all defense and this and that and the third. Well, Trae Young was going off, 39 last night? Like, you can't. Those two things can't jive. You can't have a guy taking four shots in a game. Like Royce O'Neal for Utah is the primary defender for Paul George, right? He played pretty well in the second half. You know what I'm saying? Paul George had – we'll go get into that game in a second. But he's out there shooting threes down the stretch because he's wide open. Ben Simmons, the entire game, is wide open and is allowing teams – to just not guard him. And I mean, I'm not trying to, again, I don't want to give Embiid a pass because he was bad in both fourth quarters. And the fact that he just was camping out of the three-point line, he needed to go take, like, but I there has to be some level of diminishing returns where it's like, dude, I'm sacrificing my body. I'm playing on a torn meniscus, going down here, banging in the post every single day. And the other superstar of this team is shooting four shots. I mean, not even getting like a Draymond triple-double, right? He's playing like where he's getting points, assists, and rebounds. He's just not an offensive option. And like, if he's supposed to be, that's what the problem is. The hierarchy of this team is he's supposed to be the second option. That's what it's supposed to be.
You can have the guy handling the basketball in the game who can't make free throws. Like, it doesn't go together, because that's the guy you're going to foul.
You know what, Rob? It's different than can't make free throws. Because when we normally say can't make free throws, we're thinking of a guy who's shooting like 60-something percent. Then 2 for 10? 4 for 14?
But he shot 60% during the regular season. And now, I got a stat where, as bad as Shaquille O'Neal was as a free throw shooter, in the postseason, he never shot this poorly as Ben Simmons, who's shooting like 32.5% from the free throw line. You cannot have that. I mean, it's just not doable, or you can't be out there. There used to be a time when they used to take Shaq out of game because you can't play that way. If every trip down, they're going to foul you and you get none or 1 point and they're getting 2 and 3 points. You know what I mean? It doesn't add up. So
I think the thing for me that's the most egregious about Ben Simmons, before you get into the overarching thing, okay, don't shoot. That's fine. Be terrible at free throws. That's fine. Be productive elsewhere. Lock Trae Young down. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, get 15 assists. Be a productive, get 15 rebounds. Do something out there besides be 6'10". Anyway, to your point about the 76ers.
Yeah, I just, there's something there. I mean, I know they were the number one seed in the East. Just doesn't seem to work come playoff time because it's different. And their intensity, they don't know how to close games out. I mean, the comeback that Atlanta had to make, all you had to make, Martin, was 2 or 3 baskets at some point to derail that comeback. You know what I mean? Like, really, that 2 or 3 baskets at the right time, derail that. It's hard to come back from such a deficit, but you give up 40 points in the fourth quarter. You can't have one of your stars miss both free throws in the most opportune time when you've made 20 in a row. And then you can't have Simmons, who's handling the ball, and not take any shots in the fourth quarter. 0 shots is not acceptable. What are you doing out there? Because you just said it. They weren't stopping anybody. You weren't clamping down on anybody, right? So you're not stopping anybody defensively, and then you're giving us a 0 on the offensive end. You don't even need to be out there. Anybody could stand there and allow the Hawks to score at will, which is what they did. And here's the other, let's switch over here. This is why I thought it was a ridiculous hire, and I'm going to use the word ridiculous. After what happened last year with the Clippers and Doc Rivers, I'm not saying Doc could never coach again and couldn't get another opportunity, okay? This guy won a championship in Boston in 2010. That was more than a decade ago, but he did win a championship. And he has coached some pretty good teams, but of late, his playoff success has not been good. And if this happens, I'm telling you, if I'm Philly, I got to take a look at it, because I thought it was a questionable hire to bring a guy in who just his team was supposed to win, right? The Clippers last year, choke in the second round, give up a 3-1 lead. Now you bring him in, he's up 2-0 in this series, right? And what happens? Now they're about to choke down another one. If I'm Philly, I have to look at it and really consider if I'm going to let go of Doc Rivers after just 1 year. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I don't think they will let go of Doc Rivers, seeing as they ran the Brett Brown experiment back to back to back to back for like seemingly forever after. I mean, but I think that your point is well taken in that. I mean, we made jokes about it all last year, when the Clippers, you know, collapsed in the bubble and then Doc Rivers got fired. As the Clippers would, you know, have their moments where they would dip, everybody would be like, oh, I thought it was Doc's fault. Well, you sit back and you look at the two different teams now in the playoffs. The Clippers have gone down 0-2 in both of their series, and it's seemingly coaching adjustments that's made. And when you look at the Philadelphia 76ers, they look at like they've made literally the only adjustment that the Sixers have made is sitting Danny Green because he's been hurt. That's it.
And you got to admit that Ty Lue has made unbelievable. Is he not coaching his ass off in the playoffs?
I don't want to say always, but I oftentimes I think people get like a little overrated for their coaching jobs and so on. But But the way that, and you see the difference, the Clippers role players, some of those guys, like a guy like Reggie Jackson, a guy like Luke Kennard, they're being put in positions to be successful, right? Whereas in the, like, Ben Simmons,
how about
dribbling the ball up the court is not a position for him to be successful because he can't shoot. Like, why? Like, Seth Curry is more like Ben Simmons should be like Giannis, should be the best screen guy in the league, right?
And then you saw that terrible miss by Seth Curry at the end, right? Like he was making shots all night, and then the fourth quarter comes around. It's amazing, man. I'm telling you. And you were just talking about it, too, about the moves. I want to say this real quick before I forget. But Ty Lue was big enough to say to Patrick Beverley, you need to sit down. Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of coaches won't do that because that's been the guy they've been riding with for years, right? And sometimes you have to make that move. So I'm with you. Sometimes it's the players and coaches get too much credit, but I think Ty Lue has shown the difference with moves that he's made this year with the Clippers compared to what Doc did. I'm just saying, I'm not saying Doc can't coach in the NBA, but that was a curious hire, and if this thing flames out, it will look horrible for him back-to-back years.
Look, I mean, I'll tell you, I picked the Sixers to come out of the East. I obviously picked them to win this series, as if I picked them to come out of the East. But, like, right now, I bet on them the last two games out. And at game three, I thought I had a money in the bank, right? Game four, I'm spending my winnings already. And both of them, I see I've seen no evidence that if – don't get me wrong, I think Philly might even jump out to big leads in this thing. But Trae Young hits a logo three. Bogdanovich goes, gets an and one. All of a sudden, the house of cards fumbled. This is a house of cards. It'll stand as long as that wind doesn't blow.
Yeah, I have zero confidence. I don't believe they're going to. I believe the Hawks are going to win this series. And I know, you know, I didn't pick the Hawks going in. But I'm looking at just the way the two comebacks, the last two games. And all they got to do out for the Hawks is to have one good game, you know, not fall behind Martin by 20. You know, like there's going to be one of those games where they're not coming back from 20 to try to win a game. And if that happens, I want to see how Philly reacts. You know what I mean? Like when they get down and they have to come back and the fourth quarter. So I think that the Hawks could close this thing out. Game six in Atlanta. I think for them, I think they understand that they don't want to go back to Philly. They've lived the charm life, two unbelievable playoff comebacks, and I think they need to seal the deal right here, right now. So that's something. The Hawks and Nate McMillan, give him credit, man. His team doesn't quit. They don't quit. A lot of teams would have. You're down 26 on the road, right? We're down 26. It's easy to just be like, we can't do this, and fold the tent, but they haven't done that.
And not only that, but the last three playoff games we've seen have been epic collapses. We kind of paint them in the epic collapse way, except for obviously watching Kevin Durant do what he did was miraculous. But we paint them as these epic collapses. But it takes a team to be down 20 to keep their head about them and to not lose their composure and to not try to get it all back in one shot. And especially a team like the Atlanta Hawks that shoot so many threes, you would think it would be harder for them to come back in games when they're not hitting outside shots early on. And it's a testament to the coaching staff because you see what happened as soon as Lloyd Pierce was fired.
No doubt.
The NBA playoffs are here, and you'll be in hoops heaven betting on all the action on FanDuel Sportsbook. There are so many exciting matchups, and FanDuel is taking that excitement to another level because new and existing users, that's right, all customers can bet risk-free throughout the playoffs. Once you have a FanDuel Sportsbook account, you can bet one same-game parlay risk-free every week. That means you can combine multiple bets for an even bigger win. And if you don't win, you get up to $10 back. So tonight, if you want to play the Lemon Pepper Parlay, same game parlay, go ahead and throw this bad boy together. Nets, +6. Kevin Durant, over 3.5 made threes. James Harden, over 16.5 points. And guess what? If that doesn't hit, you can get your $10 back. Basketball fans, now is the perfect time to give FanDuel a shot. New users can still get up to $1,000 back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with promo code LP3 to bet the NBA playoffs risk-free. That's code LP3, exclusively on FanDuel Sportsbook.
All right, let's go to another unbelievable game last night. The Clippers and the Utah Jazz. I mean, everybody counted out the Clippers. No Kawhi Leonard. I mean, people were running to throw their money on Utah, figuring that, you know, playoff P, Paul George can't. Chris Broussard and I argued big time. He said the Clippers had no chance to win without Kawhi Leonard. I disagreed. I picked the Clippers last night. I've seen teams. And I know you hate me telling you that I've been covering the league since 1987, but I've been covering the league since 1987. And I've seen teams rally when their best player's not there. I've seen this. And this was a stage for Paul George to come out and play. He didn't have to score 90, but he had to play well. And he did. And obviously there were other players who played well, Reggie Jackson and different guys for that team. But how shocked were you? I mean, I'm sure. Did you bet against the Clippers last night? I don't know.
Actually, it's interesting because a lot of people were asking me. I was going to bet against the Clippers, but as soon as I sat in my chair, the notification comes across, Kawhi Leonard out game five. So I'm like, you know what? Nah, I ain't messing with that.
Why wouldn't you take that? That looks like a layup.
Because I like the line at -3, but I knew that the Kawhi news was going to swing that line. That -3 was a thing of the past. Like, and again, the line I think was 8, 8.5 by the time the thing ended up tipping off. So I don't like 8, 8.5. That's an insane number, right? That's a crazy number for two of the best teams in the NBA, right? So, what I ended up betting was Jazz -3.5 for the first half. So I won.
Okay, what'd you make of just the Clippers? And I mean, you've been down on them all year. You really don't think that they have a shot to come out of the West, but you had to be impressed with that win on the road. They haven't fared that well in Utah. That was a game that they had to win, and they won it convincingly.
I would say, like, I was impressed with Paul George in the first half, especially being able to really just come out and establish that, yo, okay, this is the type of game that this is going to be for me, right? Like, that's he came out in the first half, really established that. And the thing that made that game last night exciting, and also why I would have concern for the Clippers going forward, is Reggie Jackson was hitting shots of incredible difficulty. And the thing about Reggie Jackson, and he's been playing, I don't want to belittle him, but he's been playing above his head for the last like 5-6 games, right? He's been playing above his level that we've seen throughout his career. And this incredible shot making out of Reggie Jackson, while last night it was awesome to watch, hitting some of those tough long twos as the shot clock was winding down, I just wonder how sustainable it's going to be going forward. Because, I mean, we were in Detroit when Reggie Jackson was there. He wasn't hitting this level of tough shot, especially when he was getting the minutes. He was getting so many minutes when he wasn't like coming off the bench as he has been for the Clippers in that kind of spark plug role. So that would be my concern, is because, you know, a little bit more of Reggie Jackson, I think you're going to end up getting less of his dynamic moments, if that makes sense.
No, I hear what you're saying, but I think he's playing well. And sometimes guys just blossom. You know, we were in Detroit 5 years ago. Guys blossom from then. You hope that you get better. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar and going to make every shot, but I think the way he's playing, I love the confidence of that team. This is what I said after they fell down 0-2 to Dallas. When you fall down 0-2, Martin, and you lose the first two games at home, it's an uphill battle. And I said, nothing that they face this year, this playoff, will overtake or put them where they have a belief that they can't come back, right? Because that was the ultimate, like to be down 0-2, losing your first two games at home. So even after they lost the first two games in this series in Utah, and I told people, that's not unexpectable. That wasn't like something that people should have been like, oh my God, I can't believe they lost two. Utah was the number one seed in the West. So losing two games at in their building wasn't like ridiculous or, oh my God, had they split in Utah, that would have been big. But not losing two, so I never counted them out. I just think this is a different team that learned from a year ago, that has some players that all contribute. They have a better coaching philosophy in what they're doing. Players are put in better position to succeed. And I think that there was a turning point. And I'll go back. Game three against Dallas. Martin, you know they were down 30-11, right? After losing the first two games at home. There was their moment. They could have just rolled over. We're getting buried in Dallas. We can't win this game. They came back, won that game, won game four, lost at home. Here we go again. Oh, my God, they're going to Dallas again, win that game, and then come home and win a game seven. So this team has the utmost confidence in that nothing that happens in front of them, right, is scary or they can't overcome. I think that's what they're playing with. Does that make sense?
No, it definitely makes sense. But the thing about the Clippers that I find the most impressive is, okay, you're going to talk about down 0-2 in Dallas. Why? Because Luka Doncic is going insane, right? And everybody's hitting shots. But in the thing that you've seen with the Clippers, the first two games of these two series, Luka going insane first two games. Donovan Mitchell first two games was putting up literal Michael Jordan numbers, like literally Michael Jordan numbers. Right. And so then you see games three and four. And that's why I'm sitting back looking like these are the same players I'm watching. So it's got to be Ty Lue, right? It's got to be this coaching staff, because I'm watching these guys who are just dominating the five on the floor in game one and two, not in game three and four, and still getting their numbers. I'm not trying to say that Donovan Mitchell wasn't. I mean, he wasn't great last night. He wasn't good last night. But in game three, he was good. Game four, he struggled. But these guys are still getting their touches and getting their shots. It's just the way that they make it so much more difficult. But the thing that gives me concern is obviously you don't have that big old braided stop button that you used to with Kawhi Leonard anymore, because it doesn't look like he's coming back for the rest of this season.
Oh, I don't know about that. No, I don't. They haven't said that yet. I mean, they said it's a strain. I know everybody's saying it's an ACL, but we'll wait and see. I mean, he might be out for this series, but I think we'll wait and see before we just jump on that bandwagon. I mean, I think people thought we might not see James Harden, but let's switch over to the Nets and what they do.
Yeah, we're not seeing James Harden.
we will see James Harden tonight. I guarantee that. James Harden will show up tonight because he needed a game under his belt. And now that he won't shoot 1-for-10, I guarantee you James Harden will have a triple-double. He will have a triple-double tonight. That's what I'll predict for James Harden.
Well, what kind of triple-double, though? Are we talking about a Draymond triple-double or like an actual triple, like a 10-10-10 or like a 20-10 and like a KD triple-double like KD had?
I'll give him 20-10-10, something like that. He'll have 18-10-10, but he'll have an impact. But let's go to KD. Again, all the LeBron minions before game five in Brooklyn. Oh, now KD is going to see what LeBron has to go through. Let's see how he responds without Steph and Klay, and he don't have a stacked deck, and James Harden is hobbled, and no Kyrie. And he turned in, Martin, a performance that was suitable for framing. He couldn't have played any better. Did you see his confidence in the fourth quarter? He wasn't looking to pass the ball to anybody. He wasn't looking for help. He was like, dude, we're not losing this game. It was a performance on a big stage, on a big moment, that was as good as it gets.
I don't know if you still have this feeling, and I hope that I never leave it, never lose it. But watching that Kevin Durant performance was one of those, like, takes me back to when I was a kid watching sports with my dad. And it was like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. In my, like, you know what I mean? When you're watching these feats of athletic accomplishment. And I mean, just, and the thing about the way he really played that game was, Like, I was sitting there watching it midway through the third quarter. It's like, man, KD is, he's cooking, but he's, it doesn't, it's like, it's almost, you almost want to be like, where is he? And then you look at the stat line, you see he's got 25 points. He's on seven, but it's just, the reason why is because he's only taking 11 shots, right? It's like, man, where, it almost feels like he's not there, but he's like, man, KD's got a real quiet 22 and 7 and 7. And then he just comes out and just turns the volume up to 10. And you could see it happening as he comes. He came down one possession in particular. He came down, had a cross. He crossed back, right to left, right to left. Took one dribble on the big man and had like a, had a little turnaround fadeaway kind of from the elbow. And it was like, oh, once he hit that, you could tell he's like, oh, he's about to put on a show. He's, it, I mean, I don't know if he can, and I think part of the reason why we look at that and be like, wow, that was miraculous is because we don't feel like it can be replicated, right? Like, we don't really feel like that is one of those things. It's like, where were you when? And even, I mean, it's one of those, it was one of those performances that had the timeline going back and looking at other performances that he's had, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if he can, but I also don't know if he'll need to do that going forward in this series, because
I think you're right. I think you just hit it. He won't right. From here on out, he won't need that. I agree.
Like, because, I mean, while it was amazing and while it was impressive, I mean, Rob Parker, there's professionals out there paid to stop him. And the defensive player of the year was sitting in the corner guarding, like, Joe Harris, who was one for whoever on threes, and Chris Middleton is sitting out there on KD Island just getting annihilated, and Mike Budenholzer is sitting there just like me watching the game.
No, I mean, you would have loved for Giannis to say, I got to get on him. And if he gets it, now, he might not have stopped him, okay? KD was that electric, that hot, but I'd rather be the guy, like, he's getting it over me, okay? Like, I'm the best player defensively. So if this guy's having that kind of night, I'm going to have my hand in his face. And if he raises up and lights me up, I'm going to have to live with it. But I can't let Middleton or somebody else be out there getting annihilated, as you use the word, because that's what happened. And I agree with you that that should have been stopped or changed during the course of that. How could you sit back and watch that when KD was in such a zone? That was a bad thing. And then, you know, to get up on the podium after the game and then praise him, he's the best player on the planet right now and all that. You know, like, I don't want to hear all that.
I don't care about the post game. I get it. But I don't care about the post game. Like, because in the reality of the situation, I really try not to police what athletes say in the post game. I would like it to just be honest. Like, just don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. You know, don't tell me it was a bad shot, Paul George. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't tell me. Just be honest with me. If you think KD's the best player in the planet right now, then hell, we all saw what you just saw.
No, I get that, but my point is, if he's defending him and he's won what, two defensive players of the year, it just sounds better. It's like, I was on this dude, I did everything I could do, and we couldn't stop him. He's the best player. Do you know what I'm saying?
But no, I get it 100%.
Watching as a spectator, and that's why it doesn't mean anything to me. That's what I'm saying.
No, I get what you're saying, but I also have trouble. Like, we talk about the new NBA and how guys don't want to listen, and how Stan Van Gundy's out after a year. And if you watch the Inside the NBA afterwards, the whole conversation wasn't about how that team played no defense and, you know, really wasn't, you know, was, you know, just a turnstile the entire season, no spacing. But it was all about how these kids these days, right? So, like, I don't necessarily have a problem with a player not telling his coach, hey, I want that guy, right? Like, I would like for it to happen, but I don't necessarily require it. But I require it out of the coach to put your best defender on the best offensive player. You know what I'm saying? Like,
this is a different – they won't do it. That's what I'm trying to tell you. They're waiting for the player to come over to them and say, hey, coach, I'm going to take that. That's what guys used to do anyway. And they didn't have to wait for when Chuck Daly was coaching the Pistons, Isaiah or Joe D or whatever. They wouldn't have to wait for Chuck to put me in. We're getting annihilated. We're blowing a big lead. This is a pivotal game five. If we lose this, we're going to be, I'll have our backs against the wall. Like, they don't have Kyrie. James Harden is scoreless in the first half. If we don't win this game, how are we going to win anymore? Do you know what I mean?
And I 100% agree that that's the level of conversation that the player should have towards a coach. If a coach is having that level of conversation towards a player, we're having a major problem, right? But I do not have a problem inherently with Giannis not saying anything, because I think that it's Bud's job to say, hey, you see, like, I don't think he would have had to talk him into it. You know what I'm saying? I think if he just gives him the marching orders, he's going to go and do it. But I think it's emblematic to the bigger problem of with Milwaukee, where just in the last 4 minutes of games, they don't do anything spectacular. They don't do anything good. They don't defend well. They don't run offense well. It's all ISOs for a team that is not built for isolation. And then honestly, like, this is professional sports, and I've never obviously played sports at a high level, but having watched and observed these things for the vast majority of my adult life, if there's a guy out there, you have to treat him like he's a guy out there. James Harden, they did not take advantage of James Harden defensively whatsoever. It was evident from the tip-off that James Harden had no step. Even the one bucket that he did have, you look, he got by the guy and couldn't finish the layup. He shot a floater from like some weird, and the only reason he even got fouled is because the guy was like, what are you doing shooting from here? You're supposed to go lay it up. This is a mid-range shot, James. Are you familiar with this area? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just the idea that Jrue Holiday, who was brought to that team, supposed to be the guy, supposed to come set things up, break things down, and be like the point guard for that team. The idea that Jrue Holiday just didn't eat lunch on James Harden down the stretch is, I'm at a loss for words.
It was one play where Harden didn't even want help. Do you remember that, where he's guarding Giannis?
He's guarding Giannis.
He waves off the second guy, like, don't come over here. I got this. Like, really? Wow. I mean, well,
I guess Harden's like, look, don't come over here, because either he's just going to shoot it and he's going to miss, or he's going to drive to the lane and I'll foul and I'll miss that too, right? But just, I think that just shows you psychologically, like, that, and it's really the stuff like that why I'm like, I can't in good conscience. Like, on paper, when this thing broke down, I felt like I had good reasons as to why the Nets should have struggled with this team. And to say that the Nets have just completely dog walked them, I don't think is very fair. But the struggles that the Nets have had in this series have been because the Nets have struggled. It has not been because the Bucks have implemented defensive strategies or offensive strategies that the Nets have not been able to figure out.
No, I'm with you. And I think the Nets have a good chance of wrapping this thing up tonight in Milwaukee. I know a lot of people think Milwaukee will win. I just think I'm expecting James Harden to have a big night. I told you, a triple-double. I just think some of their role players who have struggled, like you mentioned, Joe Harris hasn't shot the ball well. Those guys are all due for a big game. And I think they understand they would love to get this finished. You know what I mean? And they have Milwaukee. They smell blood. There's an opportunity right here to win and wrap this thing up. So I'm expecting the Nets to wrap it up tonight. I do want to give you a little side note. So on our show, The Odd Couple on Fox Sports Radio, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, Benito, a guy from Florida, Martin, called up and said to Chris and I that he would bet us a pair of Jordans that the Bucks would win the next four games and win the series, that it would be four games in a row and it would be over.
Did you take the bet?
We took the bet, and he paid off.
Of course you took the bet.
Of course we took the bet, and he paid up.
Man.
ASAP. I mean, I'm just like, really? I couldn't help but take that. Are you kidding?
I just don't understand why people are offering you all these sucker bets. Like, I feel like I might be the only person in America that's not taking the Rob Parker sucker bet. You know what? In fact, if you listen to this podcast and you like to place a bet with Rob Parker, contact me. I'll take your action. How about that?
All right. So,
I mean, Lord have mercy. This is ridiculous at this point.
So we got, and then one last thing, and then let's get to our picks for this week. But one last thing. The Chris Paul situation with the COVID. Obviously, he has to be reevaluated, Martin, on Saturday after he needs another. He needs a negative test for COVID. And then the earliest he could play would be Sunday. If the Clippers end this series in game six, you know, in L.A., game one would be Sunday. So there's a chance he could miss game one of the East of the Western Conference Finals. Where are you on this whole scenario and how much this could affect him? Now, if he gets another positive test, he could be out for 2 weeks. I mean, it's that touch and go.
It's tough for me. Like, I don't under. I mean, it's incredibly unfortunate. I heard last night on TV that Chris was vaccinated, and to contract COVID after being vaccinated, after going through all of the protocols. Do I buy that Chris is vaccinated and he caught COVID? I've heard stories of that before. A friend of mine caught after that happened. Like not just anecdotally have I heard stories. It is possible to catch COVID after you get the vaccine. However, I know me personally, I have been living life as if, you know, masked to the sky, like a graduation cap after I got my shot. You know, I'm not out here. I'm doing whatever I want to do. And it's just a reminder that just because you're done with the pandemic doesn't mean the pandemic is done with you. I hope that he's able to. I mean, that's the reason why you get the vaccine, right? You know, I heard it on TV. I'm going to assume that he is vaccine. That's why you get it. So if you catch COVID, it's something that's easy to beat.
Right. I'm just curious as to the scenario and, you know, who knows who else on that locker room who maybe isn't vaccinated. Do you know what I mean? And maybe there's a chance somebody else might come down with it. It's a tricky situation, especially in a locker room as close as you are. You know what I mean? The people. Most people don't work that closely with each other, but NBA players are different. You're on top of each other. There's spit, saliva, whatever it is that can transmit it, you know, and all that. You don't have your mask on all the time. So it'll be interesting to see the Western Conference Finals and whether or not, and who knows, maybe the Clippers don't win and it goes to a game seven and then maybe he's cleared by them.
So. The ghost of David Stern is trying to figure out how to make this series go eight.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
All right, Parker, let's get to the picks. All right, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets, the game of the night. The Milwaukee Bucks are 6-point favorites, over under 220. Rob, who you got?
I'm taking the Nets +6. Is that what it is? The number +6?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous number. I don't get it. The Bucks just haven't played well enough. Even at home, they won two games up there. Martin, if you remember, the Nets easily could have won game three at the end. Joe Harris missed a wide open mid-range shot from the elbow. Brown took a bad shot at the end. They could have won game three, and this series would be over. They played well in game four. And remember, they allowed P.J. Tucker to roughhouse Durant that entire game. Of course, we didn't see that kind of defense in Brooklyn. But I think this is an easy win right here. And what I mean by that is I'm taking the 6 points. I love the Nets plus.
Yeah, I love the Nets +6 as well. I like it a lot. My only thing is that the thing that's tough about it. Milwaukee, this is such a referendum game. This is a get the apartment lease out game. Make sure that when is our lease up? Like, we're moving soon if we don't win this one. But I don't know how much it matters. I don't want to ever disparage and just completely throw away a team, but I don't know how much it matters, man. I think if KD can go and give them, you know, a cool 37-7, Harden can be 15-7-7.
No, Harden. 15. Don't you agree? You might not agree with my triple double, but Harden's going to be better in this game than he was. He's got some legs.
Yeah, I have to imagine he's going to be better, right? And then the other thing, Joe Harris is not Joe Harris is having the worst slump of his career. You know, like we're looking at, and I'm sure we can't pencil in Jeff Green for what, six for six from three. But I was thinking about it while I'm watching this game. There's a reason why Uncle Jeff Green is always in the damn playoffs. He's always in the playoffs. Wherever he's at, he's on a playoff team and he's getting minutes. And there's a reason why. And it's because he's a productive player who makes open shots and is the type of guy when somebody else is going for 50, can go for 20 while you're not looking.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think there's a couple guys on the Nets that need to rebound, but I just can't see Harden going 1 for 10. He's going to knock down. There were a couple spots in that fourth quarter that had he made threes, that game would have been put away way earlier. You know, he had a couple opportunities that he didn't make. And Green didn't play in those first couple games, right? And he didn't play in the first three games of this series.
He didn't play in the playoffs, I believe. I know he missed the back end of the Boston series as well.
He didn't play in the first three games of this series, and he played game four, I think, was the first time he played. No Kyrie. It's not that I'm not saying they're going to run them out of the gym in Milwaukee, but I like the Nets a lot in this game.
All right. So for my lemon pepper same game parlay, I'm going to take the Nets plus six. And I'm also taking Kevin Durant made threes over 3.5. I like him to make, he might hit that in the first half. All I need is four threes out of Kevin Durant. I like that a lot.
My lemon pepper parlay for this week. Martin, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to bite off on you. I'm sorry. I was going to take James Harden over 16.5. I like that number a lot. But really? They think AD won't make 3.5 threes? What? Do they really think the NBA, after the performance they had, they're going to let P.J. Tucker strong-arm him in Milwaukee and foul him and not call fouls or whatever? P.J. Tucker might have two fouls in the first quarter if he ain't smart, you know what I mean, after that performance. So I love the Nets plus six, and I love KD over 3.5 threes. KD will hit six, and there'll be plenty of room.
Okay.
Six. Can you get it? I got all my fingers in there. Six. All right. So I love that. And remember, it's always better with the cheddar. The Nets close out the Bucks, and I win some big bucks on this.
All right.
All right, that's the Lemon Pepper Parlay podcast for this week. Make sure you like us, subscribe, share with friends, all that. Martin has finally come around after all these L's he's taken during the postseason. It's been a bumpy one for you, my friend. But
just make sure you're paying your Blue Cross Blue Shield health insurance payments for all your injuries. Okay, just be sure.
I'm definitely paying up since I have some extra cabbage to play with. All right. We'll see you next week.